What is up, guys? We're back at it again. It is your boy Jay, none other than your boy, man. And man, this is gonna be a fun episode, man. This one is pretty much action-packed. Some spicy juices are gonna be flowing, salivating your mouth, getting those nostrils pumped up, man. I think this is probably one of the best episodes I've ever done, man, just with some of the stuff I'm gonna be covering. And the research was actually fun. I had a lot of fun with this one. I didn't really feel that much draining on this one. It took me a couple of days, but man, this one's going to be a banger, guys. Trust me, this is a banger. So for this episode, we're going to be covering the rise and fall of Escape the Fate, one of, in my opinion, if not the best post-hardcore band there's ever been. And I know there's probably a lot of debate around that, but when you talk about overall longevity, the members that band had, just the versatility of greatness, it's going to be hard to argue that there's been a better post-hardcore band than Escape the Fate. That's for damn sure. So we're going to be covering that at the top of the hour. Then we also have some really cool banging singles that I'm going to be covering that I have not covered yet. So I'm looking forward to that. And then after that, we're going to be talking about the top five clean vocalists of all time, and then also the top 10 overall vocalists of all time. And those genres that I included will be post-hardcore and metalcore. I know, you know, I get messages about people just wanting to hear a lot of the metalcore stuff because, you know, after all, that is what my podcast is called, understandably so, Metalcore Mania, baby. So yeah, I just wanted to include post-hardcore in there as well, just because post-hardcore is basically like the little brother or maybe, you know, the stepchild of metalcore. You know, it just depends on the post-hardcore band. There can be a lot of screaming, but then there's some post-hardcore bands that don't really scream that much at all. So it just kind of depends. You know, you got post-hardcore bands that range from bands like Alisana, Amorosa, to post-hardcore bands that are kind of like, you know, Pierce the Veil, or, you know, just bands that kind of like scream more. But, for sure. So I really enjoy gathering that information and doing that, man. It took some time, man, to really put that together because, you know, I go 100% with this pod. You know, I don't want to just state names. I want to really, you know, dive into why this person's number one or number two. And, you know, and just so you guys know, so there's like no confusion. So when I rank these vocalists, I'm ranking them off of specifically the top 10 overall vocalist list. So I'm ranking them off of their versatility and range with clean vocals and unclean. So you'll notice there's really not any clean vocalists in the overall ones, like just plainly clean, where they just don't do any unclean vocals. And the same thing, you know, vice versa. There's not going to be many like unclean vocalists that don't do cleans, you know. So it's overall. So you basically have to do both. So if you don't hear a band that's, you know, if you don't hear a singer that doesn't do cleans, you know, you're gonna basically understand why. And I can't wait to get to that part, man. That's gonna be fun, man. So again, that's gonna be the top five clean vocalists that only do cleans, and then the top 10 overall vocalists, and it's of all time. You know, and like I said, it's just going to be based on that versatility, going to be based on longevity, and it's going to just be based on projects. You know, what did you put out? Was it successful? Was it good? And that's going to definitely factor into it. But overall, I think what even might factor into it just as much as everything else is just how good the vocalists sound. You know, it's not really going to be based on the band's success. So don't get that confused, you know, where it's just like, oh, this guy, like, their music wasn't very good, but that's not really what it's about. So, yeah, so I just wanted to, like, make sure you guys knew that before we got into that, because I just didn't want any confusion. So yeah, man, just wanted to establish that, man, and shit, we should have a great episode. But like I said, guys, this is the rise and fall of the great Escape the Fate, man. And I think a lot of us saw this happening. I think we kind of, you know, we kind of saw the tides turning a little bit, whether we wanted to basically like admit it or not. And I think there was just a part of us that just basically didn't really want to admit it, because like, I don't know about you guys, but like, you know, I basically start listening to post-hardcore a little bit before I kind of went into full-on metalcore. And honestly, the fact that I was already listening to rock and then I kind of went to post-hardcore and then I got into harder stuff, I always think that maybe that's the only reason that I ever really liked metalcore and deathcore and death metal and everything else, was because I was kind of like brought into the entire hardcore world at a slow pace. You know, I wasn't rushing it. And I've told this story before to my longtime listeners, but you know, there was a slow development for me. And I think that that's, you know, very important for a lot of people that aren't in our world. You know, they're not really deep into this. They don't really know about this. Maybe they just kind of just judge it as just loud music. It's very important that they, because a lot of people like rock. Let's just be honest. Like, I feel like most people like rock. So the fact that like a lot of people, and probably like at least, I don't know, maybe I would say about 70% set to 75% of Americans like some form of rock, you know, because if you think about it, there's just regular rock, you know, like rock and roll. You have like alternative rock. You have punk rock. You have, you know, emo rock. You got, you know, all type of rock. And even nowadays, you got like a rock that's mixed with rap. You know, we saw that with the rapper Lil Peep, you know, rest in peace. But yeah, man, we just kind of see this, man, you know, how popular some form of rock is. So the fact that most people already like rock, you know, if you kind of like take them, you know, whether it's your friend or whoever, if you just kind of just take them on this journey to where you kind of like give them bits and pieces, you know, and, you know, maybe a little bit more, you know, you show them some hard rock, maybe, you know, you show them some progressive punk, maybe, you kind of just work their way up, you know, maybe to some more prog stuff, even some progressive rock, because, you know, if a person really starts liking progressive rock, then once they hear progressive metal, it'll be a lot easier to listen to, because at that point, the only thing you would have to get over is the screaming. You know, if you can accept the screaming as an art form, then, you know, you would basically fall in love with the music at that point. But that's enough chit chat about that. I just wanted to let you guys know a little bit of the background of basically how I got into Escape the Fate and how I basically started my journey into hardcore music. But anyways, the rise and fall of Escape the Fate, we're going to talk a little bit about their background and, you know, just some of the basics of what made Escape the Fate. So first of all, Escape the Fate is an American emo. And then, you know, they later became a post-hardcore band from Las Vegas. Escape the Fate was formed in 2004. The original members were vocalist Ronnie Radke, guitarist Monte Money, bassist Max Green, and drummer Robert Ortiz. So, oh, and I can't forget rhythm guitarist Michael Money, of course, which is Monte Money's brother. And then they had an occasional keyboardist by the name of Carson Allen. Now, the band was signed to Epita Records after winning a radio contest band challenge judged by My Chemical Romance after opening for them on a tour, which I found to be really fucking cool. A comparison that I would have for Escape the Fate, like a band that, you know, maybe if you're into like classic rock and stuff like that, I would compare them to Motley Crue. I would say that they're basically like the modern day version of Motley Crue. in a sense, you know. So basically their style and, you know, brilliance and stuff like that. So some of their musical achievements, you know, and just going into some of their albums. So Escape the Fate has sold over 400,000 records between the UK and the US, which is awesome. Their albums include Dying Is Your Latest Fashion, This War Is Ours, Escape the Fate, the self-titled album, Ungrateful, Hate Me, I Am Human, and Chemical Warfare. Now, Dying Is Your Latest Fashion was the only album that Ronnie Radke was on, but we'll get more into that later. Now, when we talk about Dying Is Your Latest Fashion, the album itself, my favorite song particularly on that album was actually Situations. I had a few friends that, you know, that was their favorite song as well. We used to always make fun of the video and just have a lot of fun with that album in general. Now, some other good ones, some other good songs that on that album is When I Go Out, I Want to Go Out on a Chair of the Fire, The Guillotine, and Friends and Alibis, which is a classic, man. It's just so fucking emo, dude. It literally is just so emo. It makes you want to cry and just punch someone at the same time. Some other things about this album is that, you know, is the look. I really like the look of this album. It has like good art and stuff like that. I can appreciate it. Now, when you talk about the look of the actual band, that's something that kind of made them stand out, because at that time, like when Escape the Fate was out and they were just starting and stuff like that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of like, you know, there was gothic bands, don't get me wrong, but there wasn't, they didn't necessarily have that gothic look, you know, like Escape the Fate. They were just so goth looking. And that was just very, very unique for them. And, you know, they had that goth spiky hair, you know, all that spiky hair stuff. And like I said, I mean, you know, that pretty much separated Escape the Fate. You know, if you were gothic or emo at that time and you were in, you know, middle school or high school or whatever, you know, you basically loved them, to be quite honest. I mean, if you liked their rock at all, you pretty much loved them. And especially Ronnie Radke, you know, girls were crazy over Ronnie Radke. You know, he was their he was their hero. He was their guy, you know, and that's basically the connection people have with emo. And, you know, and Ronnie Radke, he was the type of guy, you know, he has a very enticing voice, you know, with layers of convictions, you know, when he sings, you make sure you hear what he's saying. And, you know, that's what was very unique about Ronnie Radke. You know, it's just like everything Ronnie Radke says, you know, you really believe it. You know, it's like, it's very like believable. Like you kind of like believe everything he says. And, you know, we talk about Ronnie Radke. Of course, we got to talk about Monty Money as well. You know, even though they were gothic, like in appeal, the way the band's image was, Monty was actually blonde and had some badass hair, you know, with occasional raven black hair sometimes. But, you know, overall, you know, most of the times, every time I saw Monty Money, most of the time, you know, he was blonde, and you know, that kind of stood out because they were this goth man, but, you know, one of them had blonde hair, which made him really cool. And he was basically like the ghost solo for Motionless in White of Escape the Fate, you know, that one guy that kind of stands out, you know, image-wise. And Monty Money was definitely my favorite member, you know, especially when they first started. You know, I just loved the way he played guitar, man. I really did, you know. You know, and alongside his brother, you know, Michael Money, you know, who also happened to be a guitarist, you know, it's already pretty rare to be in a band with your brother, but I feel like it's even more rare for you and your brother, you know, basically to play the same position. You know, it was quite interesting. Now, although Michael Money was the rhythm guitarist, it's still, you know, it was still quite interesting that they were in the same band. You know, that's pretty unique. It just normally doesn't happen. So, you know, I always thought that was cool. I guess the only, you know, the bad thing about that is if one brother leaves the band, you're probably going to lose both, which happened later, which we'll get into. But I guess that's the only downside to that. Now, another thing about that, the band is that the band showed a lot of potential. And, you know, they had, you know, very good live performances, you know, and then, of course, you know, that was until Ronnie started getting in trouble. You know, Ronnie was accused of more than 10 crimes from 2005 to 2006, ranging from possession of hard drugs to battery. You know, and Ronnie would eventually be incarcerated for battery for a stint. You know, and while doing time in prison, Ronnie actually wrote songs and eventually, but it wasn't actually for Escape the Fate, you know. But of course, he didn't know that because he didn't know that Escape the Fate was going to kick him out. But, you know, he was writing songs, you know, while he was incarcerated, you know. But, you know, come later, he finds out that he's going to be writing these lyrics for a band that would eventually be called Falling in Reverse. Now, although Ronnie may have not known this, but he was basically the face of emo music. You know, Ronnie Radke was definitely, you know, the head honcho, if you will, of the emo music, man. So it was no surprise when Falling in Reverse became very, you know, emo and, you know, it was basically teenage girls' favorite band when he was released. Basically, you know, a lot of them just pretty much jumped on, you know, went where Ronnie went, you know, but they would soon come back to Escape the Fate. Trust me, you know, people definitely changed their tune when they realized how good Escape the Fate would become even without Ronnie. Because, you know, you think like this lead guy, you know, he leaves, but you know, people didn't realize Escape the Fate was good everywhere. You know, everyone was good, from Max to Monte to Michael to Ronnie. You know, everyone was good. So, you know, when you have a band where everyone's talented, the lead singer, whether they're good or not, they're not carrying the band. You know, and we see this all the time, you know, with bands that are able to just keep going, you know, when they lose their singer, which I could state many of examples. For the sake of, you know, the basically documentary, we're just going to keep it going. So, you know, now fortunately, there was a silver lining in Ronnie going, you know, to prison, you know, of course, because who would have guessed a new front man, you know, and like we just basically touched, an even better front man would join and ignite the band and take them to another level, which is the great Craig Mabbitt, you know, the fucking great Craig Mabbitt, a guy that fucking put in work with multiple bands that he has his handprint on multiple great projects, whether it's Isles and Glaciers. Yes, they were a good, you know, they were very temporary, you know, but he definitely had his hand in that. He definitely had his hand on Bless the Fall, which I didn't even know that was him at the time, because I remember listening to Bless the Fall. And I remember just thinking, like, I like how this guy, like, kind of, like, holds his notes. And he, like, has this, like, sad voice. And it's just kind of, like, you know, it's just very appealing to me. And, you know, who would have known that would later be Craig Mabbitt? And Bless the Fall would get a new singer, who I think may even be better than Craig Mabbitt, but we'll get into that later. But like I said, you know, they got Craig Mabbitt, and you know, I just remember when This War Is Ours was released and how bittersweet to so many people in the emo scene it was. It was very, very bittersweet, man. And I'm sure you guys, you know, if you lived through that era, you lived through that time, I'm pretty sure you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. If you were into post-hardcore emo music, you know, and people understood how great Craig fit with the band, you know, but it wasn't until the self-titled, you know, Escape the Fate, you know, album was released until fans were really, you know, flabbergasted and sold on them without Ronnie. Now, for me personally, I was sold on them after This War Is Ours, you know, personally for me. But, you know, when you consider how many hits were on that album, you know, I was already sold. But, you know, it was an insane emo masterpiece, pretty much, you know, Escape the Fate self-titled. But, you know, just when you think, you know, they couldn't get any better, they release what I consider one of the greatest post-hardcore albums of all time, which was their self-titled, you know, album, you know, which is basically what I was just alluding to, you know. And this album, you know, basically convinced everyone, as it was for sure a bona fide classic. I mean, this is one of the greatest albums of all time, just in general, a timeless classic, which what I would consider no bad song at all. There's not one bad song on this album, not one. And just good and great songs. And, you know, that's very fucking hard to do, man. We talk about that all the time. It's very hard to do, you know. You know, and there was actually just one song that I didn't really care for at first, which was World Around Me. But then when I started listening to it, you know, and I gave it a few listens, I was like, damn, World Around Me might be one of my favorite songs on the album. You know, and of course, a lot of times you have to listen to albums, you know, multiple times to kind of really get a feel. You know, you don't really, you know, music isn't like food. You know, when you eat food one time, you pretty much know whether you like it or not. But music just a little bit different. You know what I mean? So yeah, guys, you know, just a little bit different now. Moving forward, you know, with a fine core and nuclear foundation, you know, this band could only get better, as they were without a doubt the best post-hardcore band in the world. But happiness doesn't last forever, and band members began having issues, you know, pun intended, guys, with record label, you know, with creative visions for the band, you know, and things like that. You know, I'm always perplexed, you know, with the, when bands are kind of like saying, oh, we have different like creative like visions, and bands say they break up for creative reasons. Just like, dude, the band's great. Like, what's the creative difference? Like, I never really understand that, but I guess that's neither here nor there, man. But, you know, and, you know, perhaps at its highest potential, you know, but I believe the band was at its highest potential, but, you know, this is just my opinion. And I believe the record label wanted them to cut out the screaming. If I had to guess, I really do think they wanted them to cut out the screaming, because they were good without it. And they didn't need to scream, you know, and Jay could just be considered an emo rock band. But, you know, and I feel like they really wanted them to become a hard rock band, which they didn't want to be, because they would basically be wasting Mabbitt's talent, you know. You know, which, like I said, which is ironic, because their current music is hard rock with little to no screams, like basically no screams. And, you know, like when you think about it, it's just like, wow, you know, they were really arguing over that. And then that's what they became anyway. But we'll get into that later. But like I said, you know, guys, you know, later they would release the album Ungrateful, after leaving Epitaph Records and signing with Polydor and Interscope. The album was solid, but you can clearly see it was a step in the wrong direction. Granted, you know, it is hard to make an album as good as their self-titled album. You know, let's just be honest. It was an album with, you know, with so many good songs on it, man. And, you know, Escape the Fate, man. That album is fucking amazing. But, like I said, man, what album are we on? We are on their album. What is it? Just slipped my mind. What the fuck? Oh yeah, Ungrateful. Yeah. So yeah, the thing about Ungrateful is that it only had a few good songs to me. It wasn't like huge on it, but at the same time, I do think their good songs definitely like really stood out. So it wasn't a bad album, because when you have songs like You're Insane, Ungrateful, and songs like that with cool music videos like that, you know, the band's not done. It's just an album that's basically, in my opinion, it just wasn't as good as some of their other stuff. But, you know, they didn't fall off at this point, you know. But and besides, let's just be honest, you're not going to make an album as good as their last. I mean, you're just not going to do that. That's just like full potential. You know, it's like you reach your full potential, you can only go down from there. You can't go higher once you reach your full potential. And that's just anything in life in general. But, you know, by this time, the band lost Max Green, who later returned to put the finishing touches on Ungrateful, which I thought was cool. You know, however, things would go in a completely different direction with the next few albums, which saw Max officially leave the band, along with the Money Brothers, which marked the beginning of the end for the band's greatness, something we already felt on Ungrateful, but was unsure because we knew nothing they did would compare realistically to their self-titled album. We knew that already. You know, there was no chance. You know, Max joining Falling in Reverse, although it was brief, it was understandable considering him, Ronnie, and Monte started, you know, Escape the Fate to begin with, you know. So I felt like he had the right to do that. It's not like a backstabbing move when, you know, you're going to a band with someone that you started the band that you were just in with, you know. So to me, that's not backstabbing. You know, I can respect Max's decision to join that, even though he got some backlash for that, you know. And, you know, like I said, they all basically, you know, those three guys started the band, so they had the right to do whatever they wanted to, you know. But in the end, you know, in the fucking end, in the end, shout out to Chiodos, man. But yeah, man, in the end, you know, Escape the Fate would struggle mightily with their core members, and the next projects released, you know, would be, you know, with doubt, man. You know, you're just thinking like, I don't know about this, man. You know, between the next three albums, hear me out, guys, between the next three albums, there would be a total of four good songs and two great songs. Did you hear me, guys? Three albums. It doesn't take three albums to have two great songs. That's absolutely fucking insane, you know, but that's the story of the band, you know. And unfortunately, you know, shit fell, and shit fell hard. And, and you know, it basically go as follows. You know, the four good songs are Riot, Get Up and Get Out, Red Line, and Less Infants Terrible. I actually pretty much enjoy Less Infants and Terrible. It felt like vintage Escape the Fate. So I definitely liked that song a lot. Also, Red Line felt like vintage as well. But and I think the only two great songs they made, you know, from that point forward, after the band, you know, pretty much completely broke up, you know, which is sad because, you know, Craig Mabbitt's left to be with a band that just had so much talent, and, you know, they have him and he's very talented. And I just feel like Craig Mabbitt deserves better. Craig Mabbitt should definitely go join a band that's on a rise, that has talented musicians, where he can just come in with that veteran leadership and just say, fuck this, guys. We're going to the fucking top. I'm taking you there. I'm putting my fucking angel wings out, and we're flying. We're going to become sorcerers because, you know, he deserves it, you know? He's like one of those, if you compared it to a sport, he would be like one of those, let's just compare it to baseball. You know, a very good pitcher, an all-star pitcher that's never won a championship. And, you know, maybe the New York Yankees have a great team, but they're missing a great pitcher. And, you know, for the sake of this guy's career, you know, they trade him to the New York Yankees, you know, after he's already like, I don't know, 40 years old, just so he can win a title, you know. So I feel like it should be the same thing with Mabbitt. Mabbitt needs to get out of there, man. He's wasting his talent. But yeah, man, between Hate Me and Empire, you guys know I really love Empire, man. It actually used to be my intro or outro song for my podcast, actually. But yeah, I really enjoy Empire and Hate Me. They were great. But, man, that's pretty much it, man, you know, for three fucking albums, though. You know, not one great song on Chemical Romance, not one, you know. And it's kind of sad, you know, the band just never bounced back. The fact that they went from the best band in a... You know, just the fact that they went from being the best band in a lucrative subgenre to a laughingstock with albums like Chemical Warfare, you know, that just doesn't have, you know, it just doesn't add up to me, you know. It's a pretty sad thing, you know. And but, you know, that pretty much just fully rounds up the conclusion, you know, for the rise and fall, you know, of perhaps the greatest post-hardcore band ever, you know. I guess when members like Craig, you know, are having drinking issues, friction with record labels, and overall just, you know, different views on where the music should go, you know, causes disasters like this. You know, and, you know, it's just an unfortunate ending. But, you know, as they say, you know, all good things must come to an end. You know, it can't be good forever. And, you know, just to give you guys a little bit more insight into some of my favorite stuff of their work, my favorite song on This War of Ours is definitely Bad Blood, timeless classic for sure. My favorite song on Escape the Fate self-titled album is definitely Choose Your Fate. Has to be maybe the best intro in post-hardcore history. Besides, the only intro that I can even think of, you know, in any other genre, really, I mean, you know, this is just the top of my head, but would be Trivium's Capsizing the Sea intro from the album, what was that album's name? In Waves. Yeah, In Waves. And that, by the way, that was like my only album that I really liked it of Trivium's. But yeah, man, Capsizing the Sea is some shit, man. I love that intro, but that's the only intro that I can really think of that's as good as Choose Your Fate. Choose Your Fate was just an epic buildup of an intro. It was awesome, man. And overall, you know, the lyrics for the band, you know, Escape the Fate, just in general, I love their themes. You know, they were usually about war, deceit, alienation, heartbreak, and depression, you know. And the greatest thing about the band was, you know, their diversity in their lyrics. You know, it's hard to do. You know, Mabbitt always used to talk about how many different songs, you know, had a real story behind them. And I remember him telling the story about, you know, a friend of his actually being raped and, you know, by some guys that held her at gunpoint, you know. And when you re-listen to the song and you think about something tragic like that happening, you know, it just gives you a different perspective on the song, especially when you're hearing it from, you know, the songwriter. And so the lyrics actually make more sense when you think about it from that perspective. So I would advise you guys to go re-listen to that song, you know, Lost in Darkness, and think about what I just said, because, yeah, man, it's some dark stuff there. But, you know, like I said, man, you know, it's a frustrating end to a band that once captivated, you know, our life, you know, and we were just lucky, you know, that they made songs that are timeless. So we can always go back and listen to them because, you know, like I said, they definitely have some timeless classics. And I do apologize for earlier calling Escape the Fate's last album Chemical Romance. I guess I was thinking about My Chemical Romance, but I do remember saying romance. But yeah, My Chemical, you know, Warfare. But yeah, man, it was great covering the rise and fall of Escape the Fate. That's just what we're going to cover for the top of the hour, guys. We're definitely going to be back. And when we come back, we're going to be covering the top vocalists. We're going to be doing the top vocalists, guys. So it's going to be the top five clean vocalists in post-hardcore and metalcore of all time. And then we're going to cover the top 10 overall vocalists who's done clean and unclean and who's the best overall at it. So it's going to be fun. Looking forward to getting into that. And like I said, guys, I told you I was going to release four episodes this month. That I was fucking joking. Come on now, let's just be real here, dude. Let's fucking go, mate. Fucking bloody hell, eh? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, let's fucking do it, man. And yeah, so just look forward to it, and I'll be right back. What the fuck is up, guys? We are back. Let's fucking do it, man. And we're going to do it, man. So we're going to get into the top five clean vocalists in metalcore and post-hardcore of all time, in my opinion, guys. We had to make it juicy, you know? We had to make it spicy, some fuego. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't want anyone complaining. Because then I have to just tell him to suck my kick. So, you know, to avoid that, you know, we wanted to do it, in order, baby. So we're going to do it, man. In condescending order, at number five, we have Ryan Neff. That's right, Ryan Neff from Miss May I. And yes, he is still in that band after all these years, man. And Miss May I has for sure had a rise and fall as well. Maybe I should do an episode on them. As a matter of fact, I've done an episode on them. I think I just never released it. But man, Ryan F., man, the clean vocalist, man, I just think that he's always stood out in that band. When you think about Miss May I, and you think about the intensity that they had when they were in their prime years, making those great records, you know, you always thought about how intense they was, but Ryan Neff separated Miss May I. He made them, you know, like it's like eating a milkshake and like having the whipped cream. Like, you know, you don't need the whipped cream necessarily, but like having the whipped cream takes it to a whole nother level, and it like separates it from just like not having it. You know what I'm saying? Like Ryan Neff, man, that dude was just phenomenal. Like his cleans were just always at the right time. They weren't overused because Miss May I was just a band that just really needed to be intense because that worked for them, especially on the album Apologies for the Weak. They needed to be intense. They needed to set themselves apart. But, I tell you, just Ryan F.'s ability, especially, you know, on the album Monument, I feel like that's where he really rose to prominence and he really made his voice felt because, you know, these songs are intense, great, you know, just give you energy, adrenaline. Monument is one of the most adrenaline pumping albums ever, man. And you know, just like his voice, you know, just go listen to Gears, man, you know, and you just his voice on that song, or even Colossal, like they just used his voice so perfectly within the structure of their band that he's at number five because he's not the most talented clean vocalist. And I know there might actually be some more talented ones than him that maybe could take his spot. But the, like I said, the reason he has number five ever to me is because he was just used so perfectly, you know, and he contributed to some of, you know, some really great albums. And I just think that his voice just kind of captures you. He kind of has like, I wouldn't necessarily say like an epic voice, but he has like a kind of like a voice that like it's sort of like a vortex where it just kind of like sucks you into it. And it just the timing, man. I tell you, man, Ryan F., he's the fucking man for sure, man. And moving on, at number four, we have Boo Boken, man. That's right. Boo Boken, man. What can we say about the guy? I mean, Boo Boken's a fucking badass. I mean, you know, he's been a part of, you know, a few good bands. And, You know, he's just a badass. You know, all the work he's done with Blessed to Fall, you know, the albums that he's put in work, you know, it's just absolutely insane. He has a very good tone, great vocal distinction and range. And he just kind of separates himself because no one really sounds like him, for one. And, you know, the guy is just overall just, you know, just a badass, man. You know, he contributed, you know, a lot to him. And he's the one that I alluded to earlier who actually replaced Craig Mabbitt in Blessed to Fall, because, of course, Craig Mabbitt was with them on their first album, Witness. But, you know, when Boo Boakin came, he took them to another level. Just like when Craig Mabbitt came to Escape the Fate, he took them to what? Another level. And when you listen to albums like Awakening and you listen to, you know, my favorite album by them of all time, Hollow Bodies, you know, you really could see the impact of Bo and, you know, just what he did, the way that he made his presence felt. You know, as a clean vocalist, you know, he just set himself apart. Just great, great, a great, great pitch, you know, just great lyrics. And I guess that's another thing that made him great was his lyrics, you know, because he wrote a lot of their work. And, you know, when his vocal work on See You on the Outside is just outstanding, man. And you got to respect them, man. If you don't have a clean vocalist like Bo Boakin, you can't be a post-hardcore band that relies that as heavily as Blessed to Fall does if you don't have a great, you know, vocalist. And, you know, they do. You know, they do. And, yeah, man, Bo Boakin definitely is deserving of that spot at number four. Coming in at number three, greatest clean vocalist in post-hardcore or metalcore of all time, I had to go with, which, man, I'm not going to lie, man, I'm kind of, he's like probably my favorite vocalist, but, you know, I couldn't bias it, but it's Devin Oliver, man, from IC Stars, man. Devin Oliver is just fucking incredible, man, you know. All the work he's done, you know, with IC Stars dating all the way back to the 3D days when he barely got basically any work because, you know, they had, you know, Zach Johnson and Chris Moore, you know, and whatever happened to Chris Moore, by the way, he was a great unclean vocalist, man. I really want to know, like, someone put an APB out on Chris Moore. He has a huge afro. I'm pretty sure he's mixed. And he has piercings all over the place. So if you can find Chris Moore, let me know. But yeah, you can appreciate someone like Devin Oliver, man, because, you know, he waited his time. You know, he waited his time, you know, and when he got the opportunity, you know, he was like the sixth man. When he got the opportunity, you know, he took it. You know, he took it and ran with it. But, you know, when they really emphasize – a lot of people don't know this, but, you know, when IC Stars was first starting, they depended more on uncleans than cleans. But, you know, they realized that it was in their best interest to let Devin Oliver fucking sing, maybe because he's the third greatest clean vocalist ever, you know, between metalcore and post-hardcore. So not a bad idea, but, you know, Devin Oliver, man, probably my personal favorite. And, man, that dude has just done so much great work. And it's always funny to me because he, you know, they use so much crapcore, especially early on. They used even a lot more of it. And I just think it's funny because, you know, he has such a great voice. They never really needed to do that. But I guess now he's really showing that with, you know, his new project. I don't know why I'm keep fucking burping. Jesus Christ. But yeah, with his new project, Shy Beast, because I've recently seen that. And I guess him working on that and putting, you know, effort into that is why IC Stars hasn't really been, you know, going afloat as a lot of us would want them to. But, you know, I guess he's working on that. So it kind of makes sense. But, and I was listening to some Shy Beast work. They sound pretty cool. You know, they don't sound bad at all. But hey, man, fuck all that, dude. I See Stars, we need you, man. You guys rarely release albums, but every time you drop one, it's an absolute banger, man. So well-deserved spot at number three all time, man. Moving on to number two, clean vocalist of all time, we have the one and only Johnny fucking Craig, the infamous, should I say, Johnny Craig, the man with the face tattoos. Yes, Johnny Craig, the Emerosa Johnny Craig. You know, man, Johnny Craig, man, the Dance Gavin Dance Johnny Craig. I actually prefer his work on Emerosa than Dance Gavin Dance, to be honest. But yeah, man, Johnny Craig, what can you say? I mean, besides the guy at the number one spot, Johnny Craig, you know, has, you know, the most pure talent. You know, he has like soul in his voice, you know, which you don't see, you know, in our type of music, man. You just don't really see someone with his type of style, with his type of grace, you know, with his voice. You just never really see that, you know, in hardcore music. So, you know, you just got to give him a shout out, man. I noticed that he's been doing some individual stuff, you know, some music, you know, on its own, which makes sense. He's very talented, you know, and it's always kind of a little curious to me how a lot of times these great vocalists that are in hardcore music, you know, that basically like are overqualified, let's just be honest, to be in hardcore music, how they join hardcore music, right? But then they'll do solo stuff, and their solo stuff is never becomes as lucrative and successful as their hardcore stuff. I don't know if that's just the fact that people want to just see them in their element where they used to be, or if that's just a direct result of, I don't know, maybe connections or promotion. Look, I have no idea, but that I've just always been curious about that, because Johnny Craig absolutely has a voice that, you know, it definitely supersedes hardcore music. And another man's voice that supersedes hardcore music, drum roll please, is the number one clean vocalist of all time. And I think you guys already knew who that was. And if you don't have this guy in your top five clean vocalists in metalcore and hardcore, post-hardcore of all time, then you just don't know music. Let's just be real. And that is the talented Legal Troubles, Tyler Carter. Yeah, the one and only Tyler Carter, man, from Issues. A badass, man, a badass. And another guy that's done, you know, a lot of solo music. He's been doing that, you know, even way before Johnny Craig or a lot of other guys was, you know, just doing solo music on their own, you know, just getting their voice out there. You know, Tyler Carter's been doing that, you know, so much respect to him. He should do it. He is the most talented and special singer in our genre that we've seen. And, you know, it just no question about it. I can see arguments for other singers, but there's just no one really quite. When you talk about just clean vocals, the range, the delivery, the grace, the fluidity, you know, just the tenure in his voice, just everything, man. I mean, you know, no one really quite does it the way Tyler Carter does it. You know, he's overqualified. He supersedes our hardcore genre, you know. And when I use those words to describe a singer, you know, like supersede our genre, I'm basically trying to say that, you know, for some of my younger listeners, I'm basically saying that he should be in R&B. Yes, he should be in R&B. You know, he should be in R&B or pop, you know, a genre that allows him to just basically just put on all his full range and just show all of his talent. But fortunately for him, he was able to do that on Issues' last album, You know, however, you know, we kind of saw, you know, some of the things that happened with Tyler Carter with some legal stuff afterwards and ultimately being kicked out of issues. But we'll see him bounce back, man. I'm sure he'll bounce back and join another band, man, and wreck some shit, man. But those were my top five clean vocalists of all time, guys. So at number five, we had Ryan Neff for Miss May I. At number four, we had Bo Boken from Bless the Fall. At number three, we had Devin Oliver from I See Stars. At number two, we had Johnny Craig from Dance Gavin Dance, Amorosa. And at number one, we had Tyler Carter. And yeah, those are my top five, guys. I hope you guys like that. I hope you guys enjoy that. I hope you guys maybe not completely agree, but you know, you find that as a very credible list. If you don't know some of the bands that those artists are a part of, you might want to go, you know, Google them, check them out for sure. But and that wraps that segment up, guys. And we're going to be getting into our next segment, which is the top 10 overall vocalists of all time. These guys do it all, guys. These guys do uncleans, do cleans. These guys do some other shit. You know, they wreck shit. You know, they are the top 10 vocalists in metalcore and post-hardcore of all time, guys. And we will learn who they are when we come back. Stay tuned and stay metal. Hello, guys, and welcome back, all of my Stay Metal compadres. Let's fucking do it, man. We're going to do it, baby, and we are going to do it now, guys. We're going to get into it and on this juicy episode of Metalcore Mania. We're going to be doing the top 10 best overall vocalist of all time, guys, and you know I am a verified metalcore nerd. I will give you the best and nothing less. And that's just how we do it, man. You know, I've been in this game for like 10 years now, man. So I think I got some credibility, guys. And we're going to dive right into it, man. And at number 10, the 10th best overall vocalist from in post-core, hardcore, and metalcore of all time, we have, wait, before I say that, sorry. I do want to give an honorable mention because I feel like if I don't give this honorable mention, I'm going to get a lot of shit. So, yes, that honorable mention is Austin Carlisle. I love Austin Carlisle, like I'm sure a lot of you guys do, but he couldn't quite make this list only because I think his cleans aren't very good. You know, he's a great unclean vocalist, but I don't know. I think his cleans aren't really that great. But, you know, this is also a very, very tough list to crack, you know. So, you know, I know there's some Austin Carlisle diehards, so I definitely wanted to get that honorable mention out there. And hopefully you guys will agree with me, for at least for the most part. And so, yeah, going right into it. At number 10, we have Oliver Sykes. Yes, Oliver Sykes, guys. You guys should already know who Oliver Sykes is. Bring me the horizon, baby. Bring it to me. You know, a fucking phenomenal vocalist. He's been doing it forever. He's been doing it when they were pretty damn hard. Now he's doing it when they're pretty much a hardcore punk band. You know, I guess you can kind of say post-hardcore, just depending on the songs they make, but they're definitely not into metalcore anymore. But Oliver Sykes has sounded great no matter what. You know, he's proven that he can transition. He's showing his versatility in genres. He's able to change with his screen, his uncleans, his cleans, and his versatility. He has a very, very versatile sound. And he's the man. You know, he's just the fucking man. And at number nine, we have the one and only, you know, we were just discussing this guy, Craig Mabbitt. Yeah, that's right. Craig fucking Mabbitt, baby. Escape the Fate. Yes, Craig Mabbitt. Fucking phenomenal singer. What have we not already pretty much mentioned about him in the band? You know, Craig Mabbitt has done a lot of shit. You know, he really has. And you can't do anything but respect it. You know, you definitely have to respect the work he's done. You know, the delivery he has in his voice, you know, that conviction, the vulnerability. Craig Mabbitt, you know, sings with being able to sing very well and also having those harsh vocals, just, you know, him having both of those like that is just talent, man. You know, it's just straight up talent. That's all you can really say, man. You know, one of my favorite vocalists when I first got, you know, into this hardcore lifestyle. Unfortunately, he's not one of my favorite anymore, but I was definitely going to put respect on his name and what he's done and definitely put him in this list. So there you have it. Craig Mabbitt at number 9. At number 8, we have Jeremy McKinnon. That's right. We have Jeremy McKinnon at number 8, baby. Hey, man, I'm just trying to give you guys a day to fucking remember, okay? You know, but yeah, man, Jeremy McKinnon, man, phenomenal singer. A guy like that, that has cleans like that. I mean, let's just be real here, dude. Let's just lay it all on the table right now. Let's confess our sins, baby. A guy that has cleans like Jeremy does, absolutely should not be having screams the way he does. I mean, it's pretty fucking phenomenal, man, because his cleans are no joke, nothing to sleep on. And for him to have uncleans the way he does, the way he can scream, when you listen to how he sounded on songs like Sticks and Bricks, and, you know, and just songs like that, man, it just makes you think, like, just like, how, man, like, how can you just go from, like, being Mr. Nice Guy, so to speak, to, like, fucking ripping off my ear cages, man, you know? And you gotta fucking respect it, man. You definitely gotta fucking respect it, man. You know, and even on songs like Sometimes You're the Hammer, Sometimes You're the Nail, just his ability to just fluctuate. It's just fucking amazing. And I actually found it crazy that I had to put him at number 8. I thought he would be higher than that, but, you know, competition is competition. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it is what it is. And speaking of competition, at number 7, we have Mike Hranica. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I hope I am. Mike Hranica from The Devil Wears Prada. I mean, Mike Hranica is basically the, how could I put this? He's basically like the reverse opposite of Jeremy McKinnon, basically. Meaning, and what I mean by that is, he, as good as Jeremy is with his clean lyrics, Mike is just as good with his unclean lyrics. But then Mike also has good clean lyrics. So it's just one of those things where it's just like, it just kind of reminded me. And I remember when I was doing the, you know, category and the order, And I was thinking, I was just like, man, they're actually like really similar. I can kind of see why I kind of like put them that close to each other. But man, they're both fucking phenomenal, man. And Mike Hranica has done, you know, he's been around for a long time, man. You know, The Devil Wears Prada's first album, Dear Love, came out in 06. So, you know, these boys have been around for about 15 strong years. Unfortunately, their last project was not good at all to me, which was The Act. Wait, not including their last EP, of course, but because we already reviewed their last EP, which I actually found to be pretty good, which is Z II. But which is like Romer Newell's Eye, but that was actually really good. I actually liked their EP. But outside of that, when we talk about albums, The Act was not very good. Transit Blues was actually pretty solid. I actually pretty much liked Transit Blues. It was a solid album, but yeah, The Act wasn't very good. But we're not talking about their albums right now. We're talking about Mike's overall work and why he is who he is. And the man has done a lot, man. The man has put in a lot of work. And I think, you know, on the album Dead Throne in 2011, I think that's when he really showed the world, you know, who he is, you know, and how talented he is, you know. Because some of their earlier projects, you know, they didn't really have a full direction where they were going with their music. It was not necessarily just all demo sounding. It just kind of was just like, and I hate to say loud, because that's like what a lot of people would like say about our music when they're describing it in a negative way. So I won't say the word loud, but it was just more, like I said, it was just more like undirectional. Let's just say that. Like, it was a lot of screams, but the instruments were kind of all over the place. But yeah, man, on Dead Throne, they got that structure, and they made songs like My Questions, Born to Lose, and you really got to see the versatility, and it was amazing, man. Mike is the man. He's the man. But I got Mike at number 7. At number 6, we have the badass, the one and only, the man of the hour, the man who doesn't need a shower, and that is Chris Motionless. You know it, man. You fucking know it. You know, the one and only, baby. And Chris Motionless, that guy. You know, he's just that guy. You know, he's that guy that walks in the room. You know, he draws all the attention. Everyone looks at him. All the girls want him. Everyone wants to be like him. He is the man. Whether we're talking about clean, whether we're talking about unclean, it does not matter. Whether you want him to sound like a Marilyn Manson or Marilyn Monroe, it does not matter. Whether you want him to be fringe Rob Zombie, or sound like fucking Zelda or some shit, man. It does not matter. This man has taken so much influence from a lot of 90s bands and just incorporated into his sound and his diversity with not even necessarily range, just his diversity in tone and delivery. And he's just taking it to a place that a lot of people can't take it. So you just got to give Chris Motionless his due. He's been in the game for a pretty good while now. And Motionless and White is still on the rise, man. They have not slowed down. And you got to love it, man. You got to love it, man, when your favorite band is doing the damn thing. It's just a great fucking feeling. It really is. So, shout out to Chris Motionless. A lot of respect for the band, for sure, man. So I got him at number 6. At number 5, we have Andrew Rockhold. That's right, Andrew Rockhold from Crown the Empire. This man, if I had to use one word to describe him, I would just say genius, you know. Rockhold has a great voice, his tone and delivery, and just overall just tenure of his voice is just very unique. He can just go to places with his voice at high pitches, almost Michael Jackman like, and just go there, and just to also be able to scream, like, you should not be able to do that. And when you just think about it, man, one of the most signature voices, I don't even have to say much about him, just one of the most distinguishable voices ever. If I had to compare him, I guess, to like heavy metal, classic metal and stuff like that, I guess he would be like, I guess Andrew would kind of be like the King Diamond, you know, to where like his voice is just so, his voice is very unique in that way, especially since it's high. But moving on to number four, we have the man, that one bad dude, and his name is Danny Warsnop, the Beast of the East, baby. And, you know, these fucking Australians are badasses, man. But, yeah, these UK guys are great some bitches, man, you know. And Danny Warsnop put in a lot of work. He overcame a lot of demons in his career, you know, to be where he's at, man. And some of those demons are like an analogy, you know, for a thing, not just necessarily like just mental or, you know, maybe drinking problems or stuff like that, man. He had to also overcome, you know, voice problems, you know, that affected his singing and stuff like that. So the man has had to deal with a lot, man. You know, a lot of people didn't like when Asking Alexandria had to go more in the rock direction, but it was the best thing for Danny Warsnop in his career. So it was very understandable. I would be lying to you because Ask Alexandria and Motionless and White used to definitely be my favorite two bands. And I would be lying to you if I told you that I thought that Motionless and White would be good longer than Ask Alexandria, because I wouldn't have necessarily thought that, but now that they are better than them at this stage in both of their careers, it is a little surprising. But like I said, you know, when you have voice issues and stuff like that, it definitely can affect your band. But outside of that, man, Danny Warsnop is just a badass, a great guy. I actually met him before, talked with him for just a little bit, but The dude is a badass. That band's great live. He's great live. He has great energy. And overall, his voice, man, he another very distinguishable voice. And a lot of these guys, you know, in the top five are going to have, like, you know, they all kind of have, like, distinguishable voices, man. And, yeah, man, Dan Warsnop put in a lot of work. Been a part of a lot of classic albums, you know. Was a part of the band that was the most popular metalcore band in the world at one point. And things happen, man. But a lot of that was definitely due to him. It wasn't just him, though. Ask Alexandria, don't get it twisted. They were a great band all the way around. But, yeah, Danny definitely put his foot on the door. And speaking of Ask Alexandria, another man that put their feet on Ask Alexandria's door, but in my opinion, took them to I won't necessarily say higher level, but took them to a place that I didn't think they would ever be able to get to without Danny. And it's because he is an even badder ass. And that is Dennis Stauff, man. Dennis fucking Stauff at number three. Man, Dennis Stauff, man, where can we start with him? First of all, everything Dennis Stauff touches turns into gold. Everything, all the projects that this guy's been a part of has been gold. It's pretty much that simple. You know, we don't even have to really talk about the particulars with him. We can just point out the facts. You know, when you look at some of the side projects he's done, even if they've been short-lived, pure gold. Look at Down and Dirty. Look at fucking the album that he did with Asking Alexandria, you know, fucking gold. Look at the band that he's in now with called Drag Me Down. Gold. I really like their sound. Is it as good as some of his harder stuff? Probably not, but they still have a good sound. When you even look at some of his solo stuff, it's pretty good, even though I don't understand the language. Yeah, man. So overall, yeah, man, everything Dennis Stauff basically touches, in my opinion, pretty much turns into gold. And I know I'm missing another band that he's touched that turned into gold. And that band is, what band is that, man? I probably should have took that note. Top of my head. I forgot what their name is, but I have talked about them in another episode, so I'm pretty sure you guys know who they are if you've been listening to me. But he touched them in, and they turned to gold. I do know that one of their songs title is Your Number Is Up. And they're good. So everything this guy touches turns into gold. So he definitely has that rightful place. You know, when Ask Alexandra did the album The Black, it was great, man. It was great. A lot of people thought that album would be bad, but Dennis Stauff definitely carried his weight. And he proved that his voice is actually more versatile than Danny Warsnop's voice. And it ain't because Danny Warsnop was having voice issues. It's just because Dennis Stauff is a little bit greater. Coming in at number two, we have, who do we have at number two? Let's see. Yeah, we have the one and only. You guys thought I was going to leave him off the list. Come on, let's just be fucking real here. We have Matty Mullins. You know it. So close to making that number one spot, man. You know, Memphis Mayfire was definitely one of my favorite bands, and actually still are. They're still solid. They're not what they used to be, but yeah, they're definitely still solid. We know because we've covered some of their new singles and stuff like that, even on some of my more recent episodes. But they're definitely coming into form. And Memphis Mayfire looks like they're going to be going back to the old Memphis Mayfire that, you know, were really trying to make their mark, you know, and not just kind of in cruise control as we've seen on some of the previous albums. And we're just hoping that we don't get that cruise control on the next album, but it doesn't seem like they're going to do that. So if this album can be a good album, Matty Mullins would have been a part of about four or five good albums, man. And that's hard to do. That is hard to do. But I mean, when you have that type of vocal delivery, when you have that type of range, when you have that type of pulse, when you just have that type of just sound, man, Matty Mullins has just a voice on him, man, that's just fucking amazing, bro. And you just gotta love him, man. You gotta love him. He has a great energy about him. And man, he's just a good fucking dude, man. He really knows how to just lead a band, man, for sure. But yeah, man, I got Matty Mullins at number two. Great at cleans, great at uncleans, whatever you want, he'll give it to you. And the greatest vocalist of all time in hardcore music, I had to give it to my guy. Drum roll, please. The one and only former of Mice and Men clean vocalist and current Dayshell vocalist, Shay Burgett, man. This guy is insane. Yes, I said it. This guy is insane. You know, that's the only word you can really use to describe him. His voice is absolutely brilliant. I don't see anyone being better than this guy. For one reason and one reason only. His voice is just fucking fireworks, man. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. It's absolutely fireworks. You can put this guy, he has a type of voice where he can sing all cleans, but with a very intense, dark, hardcore song, but he can have cleans on it with no screams. His ability to adjust in a song with his voice, and it's not even necessarily adjusting, but it's just his voice can fit in any type of instrumentation known to man is just absolutely insane. Not to mention, he could be also an R&B singer. He's that talented. He is that good and that unique. The guy is an absolute genius with his vocals. He was amazing in Of Mice and Men. And I hated to see him go. You know, when a lot of people thought Of Mice and Men, you know, was this, you know, real hardcore band, you know, didn't really, really need their singing. And then you hear Shay and it's just absolutely insane. It's a reason he had a song where there was no screams at a time where bands were utilizing screams more than ever, with the song Purify on one of their earlier albums. But man, this guy, and even you see some of his work with Dayshell, man, it's pretty awesome. But man, yeah, man, the most versatile singer, the most, I'm not gonna say the most unique voice, but borderline. I mean, basically, you know, in that category. But man, his voice just seems like it pretty much goes with anything. The way he just has like these cues with his voice and creativity. That's the word I was looking for. His creativity is just, it's pretty much unmatched. I like the way he kind of floats his voice and he can do things that most vocalists just don't really do. And that's why Shea Burgett gets my number one spot. I think he is the greatest vocalist in all of hardcore music. So that's my number one guy. And that is pretty much unbiased, or I would have had Chris Motionless as number one, let's be honest here. But as a review, at number 10, we had Oliver Sykes. At number 9, we had Craig Mabbitt. At number 8, we had Jeremy McKinnon. At number 7, we had Mike Hranica. At number 6, we had Chris Motionless. At number 5, we had Andrew Rockhole. At number 4, we had Danny Warsnop. At number 3, we had Dennis Thoth. At number 2, we had Maddie Mullins. And at number 1, we have Shea Burgett. And that is the best overall vocalist in metalcore and post-hardcore of all time. I just wanted to really mostly focus on metalcore because I do get a lot of requests saying to just really focus on that. So I didn't really want to include prog bands or, you know, deathcore bands and stuff like that. So I just wanted to focus on my main craft, which is metalcore. And hopefully that list delivered for you guys. And when we come back, we'll jump into our last segment, which will be covering some new, not necessarily like brand new, but covering some recent singles, guys. So we'll be right back to close the show. Thank you guys for hanging around. Bay Metal. What is up, guys? We are back at it, and we will wrap up this episode, this very fun episode, with some key songs I found very interesting that has recently come out, whether it's been like this past month or a few weeks or maybe even a few days ago, and just want to touch bases on them, you know, give you guys some songs to check out for sure, man. And then I'll also be saying what my song that I'm listening to is, basically like, you know, like a song that I have on repeat, and just to throw out another specific song for you, maybe some newbies or just some guys that want some more songs for your playlist. Jumping right into it, we're going to be talking about the band Krosis, which basically is a progressive deathcore band, which is rare. And I really enjoy them and their work, man, for sure, man. And their music videos are always fun as well. Similar to the one that we're talking about today, which is Bajonia. And when we talk about this song, Bajonia by Krosis, you know, it's a very unpredictable track, you know, with subtle piano and keyboards, you know, that weren't overly done, you know, so I appreciated that. You know, they had neat chord progressions in this song, you know, solos that mix in, you know, speed picking and pleasant melodies for this track for sure. You know, the bass was also huge to me. It had a dreamy feel to this song, you know, which you don't normally get with deathcore. So that made it like very unique in itself, you know, and pretty much, you know, the lyrics are about basically like being in an infernal abyss, which could be, you know, it can be like related to like physical or, you know, like the physical earth, or basically like an analogy for like a place like hell. I didn't really like fully grasp the message in that regard, but I know that it's just about like understanding that no matter who, you know, they meet, you know, they meaning the characters in this song, you know, no matter who they meet or get to know, it'll all be a waste of time because they're trapped in a wasteland that will only rot. So it's just basically about characters that are just like, they feel like wherever they are, which in my opinion isn't really made clear lyrically, but wherever they are, they just kind of feel trapped and there's just no way out, and they're just crying out basically. But definitely a song to check out, guys. It's Begonia by Croesus, man. Progressive deathcore. Moving on to The Browning, which is a crabcore band. They released a song called End of Existence, which, you know, when we talk about a song like this, you know, the buildup was pretty wicked. You know, it had very eerie keys going on. It had a unique intro that took a while, but was very enjoyable. You know, it felt like an epic breakdown and like a horror movie at the same time, which is fucking unique, right? You know, I think the keyboards and distortion played a key role in making this song great, along with perfect electronic influence and balance, which is hard to do. You know, I think it had brutal vocals. So shout out Johnny McBee, you know, very brutal vocals as usual. The Brownie always delivers in that category. You know, and I think the lyrics are pretty much about calling upon a legion of beings, you know, to go to war with humans because of humans' fuck-ups, you know. So they basically feel like humans' fuck-ups will result, you know, in the world being fucked up. So, you know, this legion, you know, of new beings feel like they can only take over the world if they, you know, get rid of humans, you know, because humans are fucking up. So I found that to be like very cool and like very like kind of like funny, playful lyrics at the same time. Like if you don't take it, you know, so serious, which I don't really take all these lyrics that serious. And I thought it was cool. I think these lyrics is actually pretty cool. And that's by The Browning, which happens to be one of my favorite bands. I love The Browning. I've been listening to them ever since the fucking, The Time Will Tell days, or Ashamed and Standing on the Edge and shit, man. Yeah, man. We're out here, baby. Moving on to the last single we're going to be talking about, which it was only right to cover the number one vocalist of all time, Shaylee, which, you know, in his new band, Day Shell, recently released a single called Blindside. You know, it starts off peaceful and has very chill vibes. You know, they drop some like Audio Machine, like Hans Zimmer style drops in the beginning, which, you know, it's pretty attention grabbing, you know, because, you know, when anytime you have like a chill song and you kind of start off peaceful, anytime you throw in kind of like some Audio Machine stuff, it definitely like surrenders you, you know, like it kind of like pauses you and you're like, what? You know, so I thought that was, you know, definitely interesting. You know, I think it has a catchy chorus, you know, that sounds like, you know, similar to like the old Mice and Men, you know, vibes, you know, definitely have those vibes without much screaming. You know, this track didn't need a lot of screaming. You know, Shay's vocal range is awesome, and its tone is something different than anyone else's, which is why he is the greatest vocalist, you know, of all time in hardcore music. You know, and I just, you know, I love how the breakdown and the vocals went from like clean to unclean rapidly. That's what stood out the most probably about this entire song, is how like, you know, the rapidness of the clean to unclean. That shit was just so sick to me, you know. And then it really gave the song a cool feel, honestly. And, you know, it had solid guitar, a very solid guitar solo and a slick outro. It's very slick, you know. The guitar solo wasn't like very unique or very like, like amazing or standoutish, but it definitely was very solid, you know, to lead up to an outro like that. And when you talk about it lyrically, the song is about being used and feeling overall like you're just getting played. But on the inside, you see everything that's happening and you just basically allow that shit to happen, you know, for whatever reason. You know, you just see it, but you just kind of allow it to happen. That's why in the chorus he talks about just like, have a glass with me, baby, you know, because I see what you're doing. My eye can see what you are doing, mate. And my song to listen to right now, my song on repeat to listen to is going to be Ultra Terrestrial by I Am Abomination. I cannot get enough of that song right now. It just kind of gets stuck in my head. Man, I love that song, especially lyrically, man. I absolutely love that song. But yeah, man, that's going to wrap this episode up. I hope you guys had fun. I hope you guys enjoyed this. I had a lot of fun doing this, a lot of fun researching this episode. On the next episode, we're going to be talking about Attila's project, which is called Bone Crew, which if you guys don't know, they're basically like a rap core group. You know, there's a rapper and then there's Franz. Then they got like, you know, some production instrument, you know, some like instrumental guys, but they're not really like too big on the instruments. But yeah, man, it's a side project that I actually, you know, enjoy. And they released the album last year, 2020, that I never talked about. I didn't even realize they had released it. So I just want to cover that. And we're just going to cover that, have some fun with that. We're going to talk about American Horror Story. Yes, because I know, come on, man, you can't be in the hardcore world and not fucking watch and keep up with American Horror Story, okay? So I'm going to cover that some. I think that's going to be fun. I'm not sure if I'm going to cover like a little bit of all the seasons or if I'm just going to cover the last season. I feel like I'm going to cover just the last season. I'm going to finish that episode pretty soon. So if you guys have any thoughts on that, let me know. But I think I'm just going to do the last season because I don't want to talk too much about it. I mean, this is a metalcore pie, guys. Let's be real here. It's like, yeah. but yeah, guys, I'm going to be doing that. And also we're going to be covering some more singles or if an album drops, obviously we'll definitely cover that as well. So I might cover heavy a lot on singles. But guys, definitely let me know. Click those links below and let me know if I should do another Rise and Fall episode or if I should just do a Rise episode. Because there's definitely some bands that have risen these past few years. And maybe I can show a little bit more positivity and talk about a band who actually rose instead of a band who fell. So. But that was it. That's it, guys, man. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Like I said, it was a lot of fun to record, a lot of fun to research. And yeah, guys, stay tuned to the next episode, man. Until then, foot on the pedal, stay metal. I'm out. Peace.
Oh, thank you.